Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse Billington, and we're back to preview the 16th round of the 2025 Formula One season, the Italian Grand Prix. To do this, I'm joined once again by my co-host, Mr. Timo Albers-Daly. How are you?
I said in our Zandvoort review that I've just about recovered thanks to a tonic from IndyCar, and I've now been bitten by the hand that feeds me because we've just had a flurry of silly season news in the intervening time since then, so I'm conk back out again and try and find a way to reset after all the excitement, but looking forward to the Italian Grand Prix. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Had a lovely evening out with a friend last night, catching up over a few beers, and yeah, also sort of allowing my brain time to slot together the silly season news that's emerged out of IndyCar that ties its way into Formula One as well, and we will get to that as we progress through the news, so we might as well dive straight in. And the good news is that Barrichello is back. Well, actually, it's his son, Fernando Barrichello, and he's making his Formula 3 debut this weekend. He'll be replacing James Headley at AIX and will retain his position at the team alongside Yevon David for 2026. Headley, meanwhile, is heading to VAR for the weekend. No word, though, on if he'll be carrying on to 2026. Barrichello is currently third in the Euro Formula Open with one win and two further podiums to his name.
It's great to see the Barrichello name back in the world of Formula One, and I'll be interested to see what he can do, especially at Monza. I don't want to say it's an easy track, but it's straightforward, and that'll really give us a bit of a gauge for the speed that he has behind him. And interestingly, AIX already have two of their three drivers chosen for next year, so it should mean now that there's a lot of working together in the off-season to ensure that everything can go as smoothly as possible when the season does kick off next year. They're still on this sort of underdog back foot kind of reputation as a team after all the time as Charouz and PHM and all the rest of it. So we've seen flashes of brilliance from them though in F2 and F3. So hopefully this is a sign of them taking things a bit more seriously with the preparation and getting things going there. And having a name like Barrichello in your stable can't hurt too much either.
Yeah, sort of a good step forward as they sort of build their way up through the ranks in these sort of junior tiers. Moving ahead a little bit more towards the Monza weekend, and Ferrari have a special livery. It's a one-off livery for the SF25, marking 50 years since Niki Lauda's first world title with the team in 1975. And I think it looks cracking. The old livery translates really well. Even the split rims from the 312T look quite fun painted onto the wheel covers. It's a joie de vivre that we rarely get from Ferrari. Even painting the wings grey to mimic the unpainted metal of the original is fun. We've got the drivers in blue overalls akin to what Niki would have worn in 75. And they've even got sort of Niki-styled helmets. It just looks nice. And again, Ferrari have got such a rich history, and it's nice to see them really pay proper homage to it as well.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the better tribute liveries. I'm glad they didn't muck up a tribute to Niki in particular. It took me a couple extra seconds to realise the extra significance, of course, now that Lewis is there, because we're so used to seeing Mercedes doing Niki Lauda tributes over the years. I'm like, oh yeah, of course, he's with Ferrari now. I still haven't had that information sink in, despite the fact that we're 15 Grand Prix deep. And yeah, other teams that do tribute liveries, take note. While this is not necessarily the best one I've ever seen, it's definitely at the sharp end and better than anything I've done in the last God knows how many years. So they just seem to have great ideas and then just terribly deliver on the other end of it. And you go, that could have been really nice. And instead you've got this split chrome orange monstrosity that doesn't look great. Whereas this, they've thought about it. You can tell, like you see the wheel rims, that's like, oh, nice touch. Oh, the wings painted grey to replicate the metal, because it wouldn't have been like that back then. Yes, that's how you do it.
Yeah, even down to sort of getting the coach lines on it, the split white and red on it, the band lines on it, using the same font.
The font of the lines, yeah.
Someone paid attention to it and had the history book open when they were designing it. And that's what you want from Ferrari, is them going, yes, we are this important team. Yes, we've been at every Grand Prix since the sport's founding. And yes, we have this incredible history. I think the only drawback for me is the fact they still haven't. And this HP, their title sponsor, do have in their sort of press docket a grey logo. I don't know why they didn't use the
Should
grey logo
maybe
for the
use
wings.
it.
Yeah, they could have used the grey logo on the wings just to tie it in, hide it that bit better. You'd still have the HP branding there, but it would just fit with the livery a lot better. But anyway, we'll move on.
Silver lining is though that the social media video that they put out with it was also quite nicely done. That kind of like old-timey film mashup of yesteryear and today, and that nice blurring of it. And they don't manage to nail it every time, but when they do at Ferrari, they do a really nice job of it. You think back to Singapore a couple of years ago when Sainz won, they had a really nice little social media thing at that point. They did a really good thing at the start of the season, obviously with Lewis. So when they do it well, and we just. It seems very Ferrari-esque. When they do things well, it's excellent. It's just a shame they aren't consistent in that through
Yeah.
everything all the time.
Ferrari's level of excellence is truly brilliant, but when they're sort of not at it, it's quite dog. But anyway, more news from Ferrari is that Jacques Clear is departing the team. He joined as a driver coach to Charles Leclerc back in 2015 and has been the chief performance engineer since then. He'll be replaced by Marc Genet, which is interesting because Marc Genet previously raced for Ferrari. He does a lot of their demonstration runs. If you've been to the Goodwood Festival of Speed, you'll have seen him running in pretty much all the Ferrari cars. So this is a man that is a driver, but also understands the cars, the technical aspect of it, but also understands it from a driver's point of view. So this is potentially a good sign. This is again another one of those signings from Fred Vasseur that makes you go, he is doing clever things.
Interested to know the reason for Clear's departure and where he'll go next, if anywhere. He's at that kind of, for lack of a better phrase, Adrian Newey age of I could do a bit more, or I could happily swan off into the sunset and just drive some nice cars. But the timing is going to be interesting. Obviously, Genet, solid choice, as you mentioned, with for all those reasons. But one of his first tasks will be to find a driver to support an F1 Academy next year, as Meyer Burg won't be able to come back at the end of the season. So I'll be interested to see who he chooses and what that choice tells us about how he's going to then operate moving forward. And if whoever he chooses that isn't the first signing, whoever the first signing is will give us a bit more on who that then could be. And I think that's always interesting to see where Ferrari are putting their eggs for the future. They've obviously had Behrmann in their stable. He's still around. They've got Kamara, who's going to be moving up to Formula 2 next year. They're known for getting solid youngsters in there, so whoever they choose, you can probably then and make a safe bet on they'll do something in the not too distant.
Yeah, I have a sneaking suspicion that Larson in Formula One Academy might have a chance. I can't remember if she's tied to a team as it is. I know she's got
It's just got Tommy Hilfiger at the
Hilfiger as her
moment,
sponsor, but
but
I know she's got a driver academy with her at the moment. So that would be an interesting one. And again,
I
she is
could see that.
promising talent and incredibly young as well, which gives Ferrari time to actually develop her and move her through the ranks at a rate that would mean she stands a genuine chance of getting in. So she's one that I think would be an interesting one to
It'd be
keep an
good
eye on.
because she's young, but she'd only have one more season next year. But then they can make active development towards her, and then already go for the next person and keep that kind of rotating door rotating at a decent speed to not be get complacent with who's out there that would be available.
And also, once you've sort of done that one season backing Larson in Formula One Academy, Ferrari being Ferrari might find a way of finding a seat in Freca or sort of finding a way into Formula 3 for it. They're a sort of a good team and a big enough team. And the way that their driver academy works, everyone forgets about the Ferrari driver academy. Everyone focuses on Red Bull and Alpine having two disastrous academies. And then Ferrari, meanwhile, just sort of gently plugs
It's
away
funny
at
because
top.
it's the disasters you focus on, and you
Yeah.
just, when they're doing things, like you say, when they get the excellence, they're pretty good at it, and you don't notice it because that's the point. They're just getting on with it.
Yeah, the Ferrari one is pretty solid. I mean, if you look at the last few drivers to come up through it, you've got Charles Leclerc, who is world-class driver at the moment.
Here is all right.
Yeah, he's pretty good. And then you've got Ollie Bearman, who sort of appeared in one race for Ferrari, had no practice, qualified the car in like set in the top end of the field and finished seventh around Saudi Arabia on his debut. You sort of go, he's not bad. Potentially sort of, and you look at what Kamara's done as well in his F3 season. He's been sort of ruthlessly, not dominant, but just clean and clinical. And you think, this is an interesting driver as well. You start to sort of piece it all together and go, I wonder where they're going next. But anyway, enough about Ferrari and more about Formula One and Stefano Domenicali's future Grand Prix comments. And sort of to put it all into a nutshell, this is a bit of a rejigging of the Grand Prix weekend format, is what looks like it's on the cards, with more sprint races, reverse grids, and possibly even shorter Grand Prix, all apparently on the table. The reasoning behind this is apparently to cater towards newer and younger fans with shorter attention spans. And most fans don't actually watch a Grand Prix these days. They'll often consume it as highlights package. They'll look at it through YouTube. They'll look at it through TikTok. They're not basically sitting down as you or I do and watch a full Grand Prix Sunday. That's just not something that a younger generation does. And this also follows on from the news that Formula One is looking to demystify the language around its new regulations so it's more easily digestible for fans. So there's this change that's coming, and it's going to be tricky to commentate on this without sounding like an old fart or a stick in the mud going, no, I want my three practice sessions, my qualifying, and my Grand Prix, and I want nothing to change about this.
Well, let me give it a go instead then. I'll work in reverse. The demystifying of the 2026 regs to make it simpler to understand. I actually am on board with that because whilst people like you and I have no problem getting lost in the weeds and trying to make sure that we've understood the same words in three different sentences that could mean something slightly different in each of those, we love that sort of thing. Not everyone's going to want to do that. So I think why not have an easier version to understand? And if you want to have the cliff notes, there they are, and if you want to have the in-depth version, that is also available to you. Fine. Everything else, less so, because despite appearances at times, depending on how many beers we've had and what kind of a night's sleep we've had, we are not as old as we may look, and we are quite young still in the grand scheme of things. So these young people that Minicali is talking about is going to be what, pre-20s, very early 20s at the absolute latest. And I do find it mad that anyone post, 24, 25, the age Colton Herta, link for later, is now old. And we get enough of that kind of nonsense in Formula 2 and Formula 3 for somewhat rejecting drivers in the first place and going, oh, there's no pathway for you because you're already past your sell-by date. It's a bit of a kick in the balls for a lot more fans than I think he realizes. Obviously, there's the implication that it's all the old, like, stuffy 70, 80-year-olds who are, oh, back in my day, it was like this. But, like, A, yes, it was, but B, it's always been like that. There's not been that many changes in the grand scheme of things to the format. You had attempts at changes here or there, but when Bernie would do it, he'd go, yeah, that was a terrible thing, like the qualifying in 2016. Fans hated that. I'll go back over here. And he listened to the fans. And I want to know who Stefano is supposedly listening to and all of this is about, because reverse grids and sprints, fine. They should have maybe done that in the first place. They had a perfectly good format in F2 and F3, copy paste. Don't know why they messed about and are still messing about with it as it is. If they wanted to make that interesting and have more racing action, a reverse grid is the obvious way to do that. But a shorter Grand Prix, no. Popularity of endurance races these days, both for WEC and ELMS, is going up. IndyCar, about 2 hours long, each one, depending on what you get. That's rise in popularity over the last year and a bit. NASCAR as well. That's, I mean, to oversimplify, if you can watch a car going around in circles for best part of 2, 3 hours, I think you probably are all right there. Football matches, if you want to go elsewhere, they're 90 minutes. Has anyone ever complained that a football match is too long? No, it's not a conversation that even casual viewers have of it because they're there for the 90 minutes. It's part of the fun. You build up. It's part of the Grand Prix. And if you take Zandvoort as an example, if you shorten that Grand Prix by 20, 25 laps, very different outcome and a much less enjoyable Grand Prix, nowhere near as much racing action. And you do that to many a Grand Prix. Look at 2021. Look at Abu Dhabi. We wouldn't have had that, but what a complete difference that would have been in terms of maybe the entire popularity of the sport and the engagement that it got out of it. And like you say, most newer fans don't watch Grand Prix anyway, so why would you bother shortening it if they're already consuming it through 10-minute highlight packages or reels on Instagram and TikTok? I also wonder how much she's thought about, if at all, the price of being able to watch F1 properly anyway. Around the world, Sky isn't cheap. It's the same elsewhere. And maybe a lot of new fans, younger fans, they don't watch all of it because they can't afford it, because I don't know if anyone's noticed, but it's a little bit expensive generally to just live these days around the world. So I think, as politely as I can say in summary, fuck off, Stefano. Leave it alone.
Yeah, I mean, let's see. If I were to go and just try and sign up to F1 TV now, subscribe. Let's see how much it would like to charge me. £20 a year.
But that's for,
And
you're
that's
in the UK and you don't get much of stuff. I looked at
no,
this
that
at the
only
start of the
gives me
season and
time and
it's
data
about
and
90 quid if you wanted some of the basic stuff. Which is still one of the cheaper options, but still, that's if you're in a play in a country that doesn't have any kind of F1 coverage at all, and you still have to find 90 quid to pull out. Which chances are, if you're in one of those countries, it might be a little bit difficult to do that in the first place because F1's decided you're not worthy of sending someone to have broadcast rights and your own package anyway.
It's yeah, a very it's not a cheap sport to enjoy even from the comfort of your own home, let's put it that way. And I don't get the idea of shortening races to make them more appealing. That sort of
That's
defeats
never
the effect.
worked.
Yeah. I can't see that playing out. I think there'll be a
When you
bit of
look at
a backlash.
the sprint races in F2 this year, most of them, and maybe unpopular opinion, but they haven't been that great. And it's because, much like in the F1 sprints, they bang on a set of tires and go, well, we don't have to pit, so if we do pit, it's going to compromise us, so we'll just tire manage. What's to then stop drivers doing that in the Grand Prix? We're like, okay, we're going to have one stop on lap 30. Because then we can make it 20 laps on the end and we don't really need to fight for anything, so we'll just hold station. What's the point? What are you going to achieve?
Yeah, I think the problem he's got is people won't pay attention to sort of 300 kilometers of racing because there's not actually a lot of racing at some of these weekends where we go to, and there's not a lot of overtaking, China, for example. And then if we had cars that were smaller, more nimble, could overtake, people might
You're reading
watch
my
it. That's
mind.
the reason why people watch IndyCar and watch NASCAR, is because you've got constant overtakes. Think back to literally last weekend in Nashville. Think about the battle for third place at the end of final lap.
74 overtakes in the top five, I think I saw earlier, 150 odd in top 10 and just under 300 overall. And ironically enough, despite him not knowing that he was going to do this at the time, I think Christian Horner, of all people, summed it up best back in Drive to Survive. If you want something better to happen, change your fucking car. Maybe that's where the easiest thing is. Just make them smaller, make them lighter. Job done.
So I'm hoping,
Don't be messing with the recipe.
I'm hoping that he leaves race formats alone until we've at least seen how the new generation of cars go. Speaking of the new generation of cars, I think engine suppliers are sort of on the verge of intercompany discussions about the next stage of engine development, with the word being that naturally aspirated V8s could be making a comeback with sustainable fuels, which would sound a lot better and possibly
Yeah,
also again, draw
wouldn't mind
more.
that. And you look at IndyCar, they've got the hybrid system, but they've had 100% renewable fuels for at least the last two seasons now. So again, it's doable. You can get the best of both worlds if you really want to. I don't know why he doesn't want to and wants to do everything except the obvious to fix the
Yeah.
problem.
And also going to a simpler engine format brings in more engine suppliers. Renault would possibly look at sort of restarting engine development if they've not got to keep building hybrid and battery packs to go with it. And also, it's lighter and it's smaller and it's easier to package. And that would give you a lighter,
Get another
simpler
team on the
car.
grid.
You could get another team on the grid, but you'd have lighter and more interesting cars to race. And all of a sudden, the series comes alive once more. And again, Formula One is about pushing the bounds of technical engineering, and also a little bit about the idea of excess. We shouldn't be racing sort of the world's cleanest hybrid cars. You should be able to develop a clean, running, clean, and efficient car, but I'm not saying that essentially we should be working towards the point that they're just racing Toyota Priuses. Anyway.
Okay, so I'll say one last thing just to summarize, which is he seems to be mistakenly reading the quote wrong of Formula One is a sport that entertains. It's not an entertainment that happens to be sport. If you want that, go to WWE. They do a lot of great and hard work to make the show look great there, but they're under no illusions that it's natural. Here, it's a sport that entertains, and don't forget it.
Yeah, very important line. Moving on to something we've sort of already mentioned in passing earlier on in the news section. Colton Herta is joining Cadillac for 2026. The former IndyCar driver will become their test driver for the new season coming. And it does raise the question of, will we see him in Formula 2 to bridge the gap in his super license? He has been very outspoken about the way that IndyCar gains and earns points for super licenses, including on a podcast sometime recently, joking
I was
that
about to ask if you'd seen
going
this.
to go tractor racing because essentially it earns more
Super license points.
points than IndyCar. But yes, so he can do FP1 sessions as it stands, and those sessions will earn him points on the license too. But Formula 2 would also give him the chance to learn circuits coming up that are relevant to the F1 calendar for which he would be testing. So yeah, this is an interesting step, and I think Colton's been gunning for this for some time.
Well, definitely, ever since the rumors of Cadillac or Andretti joining F1 first came about, Fortenhertel was the driver to do it with them in some capacity. And it all started yesterday when you had the announcement that Will Power was going to go to Andretti after Herta replaced announced that he was leaving. And at that point, we didn't know what was going on because it all kind of came out in bits and pieces. So you've got Power at Andretti with Kirkwood and Ericsson next year, Herta, then I believe Formula Two with Prema. And that'll be as part of their technical alliance to help them in IndyCar, which could also benefit Prema because then they would run Dennis Hauger in IndyCar next year. There's kind of Matt Yin and Yang going on. If Herta does well in Formula 2, I reckon that he'll replace Bottas in F1 in 2027, and that Bottas then he just essentially swaps places with where Herta used to be. He'll go and replace Ericsson for a Power, Kirkwood or Hauger in Bottas lineup at Andretti Global 2027. What Herta's doing, essentially what Hauger's been doing over in America, which is going into the formula just below the main series, learning the tracks, making sure he's up to speed with as much of the technology as he can be and all of the aspects to get embedded with it and then going to the main thing. So I think the same thing could happen then in 2028 if Herta does need a second season in Formula 2. But either way, you've got a nice idea there in Bottas. So I was curious to think, why would he only sign a one-year contract? Maybe it's a 1+1 depending on performance, depending on what Herta does, but then also with the eye of, I quite like the idea of him in IndyCar. Him in F1 now doesn't excite me, but him in an IndyCar, that I'm up for. So I would like to see that. And I think the last driver to come into this then potentially would be Jack Crawford. He could come. He's an American driver. There's been a bit of talk about him for possibly being one of the rookies to have gotten one of the seats at Cadillac. I think he comes under that banner next year, either in Formula 2, either in Formula E, or maybe Indy next, and then with an eye to getting an IndyCar seat or an F1 seat in 27, 28, depending what you've got there, and they can get maybe both of their American drivers. Perez has had his time to do what he needs to do, and then you've got an all-American lineup at Cadillac to take on Haas's, who's the bigger American team in 2028, and you've seen how the regulations are working by then.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think especially the theory of Bottas heading off to IndyCar ties in because he mentioned, I can't remember if it was before he had announced he was going to Cadillac or once he had announced it, but one of the things he was looking at for the future was potentially like challenging the 500. And I was because I remember looking up whether or not Bottas had won Monaco. He hadn't, but it'd be interesting to see. He's obviously podiumed at Monaco a couple of times, so near as damn it. But I was sort of thinking, Bottas to IndyCar would be interesting. And I think he's got this unique mentality. I
Maybe
think
he could do a sheep man's a triple crown and get on the podium at all three of them instead.
Yes,
Oh
sort
God, I
of.
nearly did it.
Nearly. But I think it'd be, I think he'd fit in well at IndyCar as well. The chaos, the energy of it, the sort of current personality we have of Bottas would slot in really nicely to IndyCar. And I think he would do well there. And again, using that sort of tie in between Andretti across sort of a bunch of different sort of areas and using sort of that ability to blend it in, as well as sort of bartering sort of a bit of performance with Prema as well as they sort of look to continue their IndyCar seasons. Would they be adding a third seat to welcome Helga? Because I know that
Not
both drivers
necessarily.
got longer contracts.
Shortman's gone, essentially. It's just a matter of time before that's official. Then Ilott, I don't know if he's staying, but if he is, then you've got Hauger and Ilott, and that's a solid enough lineup. Ilott's done well at points this year. And if not, I'm sure they can find another driver. Maybe Jack, that's where Jack Crawford comes in and he just skips Indy next. We've seen plenty of drivers go from Formula 2 to IndyCar and it go quite well for them. So with it being silly season at the moment, you could also see someone unexpectedly go there like Rinus VK. So I don't think they'll be short of people to fill that seat if they need to. Grosjean's even said that he wants back in an IndyCar. He's been their reserve driver this year. Could be Grosjean and Hauger next year, for all I know. But
Yeah.
I don't think they're short of a couple of people.
Yeah, I know Ilott was pretty much in contention to, down to the final laps this weekend of Rookie of the Year as well. Was
No,
it
that was Schwartzman because
wasn't it?
Ilott's not technically a rookie.
Yeah, that was it. I knew it was one of the Prema guys because I know it came down to the final few laps. They were sort of discussing it on commentary. Like it really depends who finishes where between him and
Louis Foster, and
Foster.
then Robert Schwartzman kind of took himself out of contention by getting a penalty for blocking, and it was all undone.
Yeah, it was a strange little moment, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see sort of how this all shakes out. But Colton Herta to Cadillac for 2026, big news, and it'll be interesting to see what he does with it. Speaking of junior drivers and FP1 sessions, we'll move into some fun facts about the Italian Grand Prix as we look more focusedly towards Monza. And we've got Alex Dunn back in the McLaren for FP1 this weekend, while Paul Aron is also back and in the Alpine as well, which could be interesting. And again, I think Alex Dunn in the McLaren, we've seen him punch in some pretty quick times. I think we last saw him in what, Austria, I think, off the top of my head.
Australia, I think that's about right. I don't know what his future is going to be like. I think he goes back to F2 and hopes that McLaren have such a falling out with one of their drivers that he can get in for 27. Or he's potentially off to IndyCar maybe to replace Nolan Siegel. But I don't know where else he would go otherwise. There's no room at that inn. Paul Aron, there's plenty of room at that inn. Have your pick, basically, I think.
Yeah, there's. I think Paul Aron will almost certainly end up with an F1 seat. It just won't be a good one because it'll be Alpine. But Alex Dunn is in a sort of a tricky situation where, unless McLaren have a
He's
fallout.
arrived a year too late to, you know, the massive influx of F2 drivers.
Unless McLaren have a huge falling out with Norris over this season, if it doesn't pan out with a championship for Norris, I can't see him ending up in F1 at the rate it's going. So we'll see how it goes. Anyway, have you got some fun facts for me?
I do. I've got a question for you because obviously we know that Pierre Gasly and Sebastian Vettel got their maiden wins in Monza, but can you name any of the other drivers over the years that have also achieved that feat at Monza?
Jackie
There's
Stewart.
six of them. Jackie Stewart is one of them.
Phil Hill.
Is the second one, and you've potentially got the okay, two out of the four easiest.
So we've got there's six in total. So we've got Gasly, Vettel, Phil Hill,
No,
Stewart, or
there's eight in total, but I
eight in
wasn't
total. Okay.
counting Vettel and Gasly yeah, because they were
Okay.
too obvious.
Too obvious. So we're halfway there through the full eight. Who else would have got their maiden win in Formula One at Monza? I feel like we're talking 80s for this as well, for one of these, possibly.
Possibly. But
Don't
also not for some of them.
I don't think it was Lauda. No, he'd won before
Nope.
we got to Monza those season. Oh, this is a tricky one. I don't know. You're gonna have to put me out of my misery because I could be here guessing for till the cows come home.
And so in reverse order, so most recent to oldest before Jackie Stewart, obviously, because Phil Hill and Jackie Stewart, that was 1960 for Phil Hill, and then you got the old ones, so not too bad on that one. But most recently, before Sebastian Vettel, was Juan Pablo Montoya. He got his first win at Monza. Then you've got to go back to Peter Gethin for his first win. Clay Regazzoni was the other one I thought you might get. He got his first win at Monza, and then the driver that I will really want to Google now because of the name, Ludovico Scafiotti, got his first win at the Monza Italian Grand Prix. Although I know nothing about him, but I'm intrigued now. So that will be my homework for later.
I should have got Regazzoni because he was also a teammate of Niki Lauda. I was working in the right direction when I was thinking of Lauda. Clearly, my brain is heading down the right pathway. But anyway, have you got any more fun facts for us ahead of the Italian Grand Prix weekend?
No, I thought that'd be enough to tease the brain muscles for today. See if I can find anything for after the weekend.
Perfect. In that case, we'll dive into our predictions and we'll start with pole position predictions, please.
So you're saying your brain is looking in the right direction. I think, judging from the look of these predictions, you may be working backwards in the opposite direction now with the realism and ambition here. But there we go. I've gone for Oscar Piastri for
That's a
pole
fair
position.
one. I've gone for Charles Leclerc because I reckon over a lap, Ferrari can get away with a setup and Charles will be able to extricate some speed from it. I think he could be up there for at Monza, especially where they can turn everything up. They can take the wing off so they aren't worried too much about that plank wear either. And they'll be able to nail down their setup. Could be a good weekend for them. Podium, different affair. We've both picked the same guy
Very
to
different affair.
win. And then after that, it gets a bit jumbled.
Yeah, we've both gone for a Piastri win. I don't think that's too much of a spoiler for yours. But then Yes, it's a tinge of optimism, but I think I'm allowed it at Monza at the same time. See, you've taken things a bit more outrageously, hence the criticism. I've gone with I've got derangement syndrome because it's Ferrari and it's Monza, so I'm going to get away with this a bit more. So I've gone for Hamilton in second and then Rust in third because I feel like it could be one of those Monza races where survival will be enough to get you up there within reason, which is the within reason is for your podium. Because I don't think this is within reason.
Yeah, Russell is one of those drivers that's good at just survival races, does nothing, comes third. Yeah, meanwhile, I've got, as you said, Oscar Piastri for the win. And then I think Max Verstappen second. I don't think that's too out there.
Yeah, strangely, and do you know this? That was not the bit I was referring to.
Third place, Yuki Tsunoda. I think we could. I don't know. It just feels like Monza, we might get something interesting. And again, you said that it could be an interesting race, but often that doesn't pan out in the favor of this driver. So yeah, Tsunoda
As
third.
last weekend proved, not
Yes.
even a week ago.
Yeah.
Its points goes down in championship.
Yeah, but if he got the points allotted for third place, what's that, 12 points? That would hugely change his championship round.
Yeah, but it does rely on finishing third.
It's a big ask. We'll see how it pans out. Meanwhile, fastest lap, Timo, you've gone for the
I've
prong.
taken your kind of logic for one lap pace, but not in qualifier, one for the race, and that's why I'm going for Charles Leclerc for the fastest lap. I reckon if he's not in contention for the win, then he might be in like a lowly podium or fourth place position with a lot of clean air and go, sod it, why not? I can just do speed at Monza and give the fans something to shout about.
Yeah, they'll run soft early on, get in a quick lap, hold it, and it won't be beaten for the rest of the session, sort of thing. I think I can see your logic. I've just played it straight down the line. I've gone for Oscar Piastri with the fastest lap because the
You need
McLaren's
one
up.
safe prediction.
Yeah, I need one safe prediction. I think. Yeah, I need to keep one hand in the predictions battle this season, and then we get to the wild prediction, and this does get wild. Timo, we'll start with yours.
Ferrari 1-2, it would be nice. I don't mind which way round. I've got my preference, but I wouldn't mind which way round. So Ferrari 1-2.
Yeah, Charles won here twice already. We could let someone else win here with the Ferrari seat for a little while. Like, yeah, it would be nice to see that, especially a good turnaround off the back of a double DNF.
And
My
they've done that before.
they have. My
In a
wild
while.
prediction is an Alpine podium.
Gasly's got form at Monza.
Yeah.
Pinto has raced at Monza.
Yeah. And also, it's not a very technically demanding circuit, which means that the absolute scrap
It's
heap
more
that is
crashing
the
ability.
Alpine, well, yeah, the scrap heap that is the Alpine might have a chance to actually be competitive. It's a bold theory, and we'll see how it plays out. Anyway, that's all we've got for this episode of the Undercut Podcast. We'll be back for a review of the Italian Grand Prix in a few short days. In the meantime, though, Timo, where can you be found?
This time around, you can find me over on the Paddock Chronicle, where I've got an article out the case for Abby Pulling and why she should be in Formula 3 next year, and if she's not, why not? I've also got an IndyCar Nashville review out over on the Curbs IndyCar, and an interview with Turkish racing driver Selim Elbir over on Instagram.
Lovely stuff. And if you'd like more from me, you can pick up the latest issue of Classic Car Weekly, give that a read, or subscribe to the Classic Car Weekly podcast, which has a load of brilliant bonus bits in it. And of course, you can find me on the internet, on social media as @JesseOnCars, in all the usual platforms, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, plus YouTube, occasionally on there these days. But that's all we've got time for. We'll be back with a review of the Italian Grand Prix.